Welcome everyone to the Middle East Forum conference call. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow with the Forum, and I'll be your chair. Today we welcome Deputy Speaker of the Knesset and Chairman of World Likud, M.K. Danny Danon, whose recent book, Israel, the Will to Prevail, lays out a compelling case for Israel to base her foreign policy decisions on her own best interests, even if it means going against the U.S. administration. Now, given that President Obama, in his words, is blocking out the noise, M.K. Danon's presentation is very timely. M.K. Danon?
Shalom.
You may go ahead.
Shalom. I'm very happy to participate at the conference call. I had the pleasure to host the Middle East Forum with Mr. Daniel Pipes, a close friend of mine in the Knesset a few months ago. And I want to share with you in the next 10-15 minutes the main ideas in my book, and then for sure to get your comments and questions, and I hope we will have interesting discussion. I would like to start with the Yom Kippur, because now here in Israel we are all getting ready for Yom Kippur. We are evening before Yom Kippur. And in my book, I tell the story of the Yom Kippur War. And I think the lesson that we have to learn from that story, that the Prime Minister of Israel must take the decisions that are good for Israel, period. In my book, I reveal the information that Prime Minister Golda Meir, even when she knew that the war is about to start, she was afraid. She was in shock. She was afraid to take the correct decisions, because she was afraid from the reaction from Washington. She was actually telling her people, I do not want to upset Henry Kissinger. He is very strong today. And this was a failure in terms of a decision-making policy, because she should have actually called the reserves. She should have actually ordered a preemptive attack like we did in 1967. But by failing to do so, We paid a heavy price, and we were very close to a situation that was almost irreversible in terms of winning the war. And I think that today, when we see what's happening in Iran, and Ahmadinejad, as we speak, is in New York City, speaking at the UN, we have to realize that no matter what President Obama, or whoever will be in the White House, will tell us, we have to take the right decisions, even if it means to ignore or to disagree with the administration in Washington. We are very close to the U.S. We love the American people. We love the American values. But Israel is not the U.S. We cannot afford making a mistake. If the U.S. will make a mistake regarding Iran, it might hurt the American people. But if we make a mistake regarding Iran, it can be something we will not be able to repair. That is why I told the Prime Minister before he is leaving, Motzei Kippur, to be strong, and I'm sure we will present the message in a very clear way in the UN right after the Yom Kippur. Another issue that I addressed in my book, I call it the three-state solution. You know, we are hearing so much about a two-state solution, and actually, let's face it, we have been talking about two-state solution for almost 20 years, since the Oslo Accord was signed in 1993. In the White House, until today, we're hearing about a two-state solution. Well, it doesn't work. We tried it. Land for peace does not work. When we see what's happening today in Gaza, and today we still have people in Israel, and I'm happy to say that they are the minority today, that think we should make more concessions. For example, Defense Minister Ehud Barak, only today in an interview to one of the newspapers, said that we should actually take another unilateral action in Judea and Samaria by actually giving more land to the Palestinians. I think we should have a different approach. We should defeat the Palestinians, and we should, in the future, in the long run, speak about a three-state solution where Israel, Jordan, and Egypt would be the only state in the region, and the issue of the Palestinians would be determined with those three states. We all have to share the burden to solve the issue of the Palestinians. And I think my vision is that we should apply Israeli sovereignty over the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, annex the majority of the vacant land without the population or the heavy populated cities of the Palestinians in Judea and Samaria that will be linked in the long run into Jordan, and Gaza will be linked with Egypt. And look what's happening today. Today, as we speak, the leadership in Gaza is very, very close to the leadership in Egypt. And there is no connection, real connection between Gaza and Judea and Samaria and the PA. Even today, Abu Mazen does not go to visit his brother and sister in Gaza. You know why? Not because he cannot. He has a VIP passage. He can go whenever he wants. He doesn't go there because nobody can guarantee his safety today in Gaza. This is a reality that we are facing today in the Middle East. It is very fragile. We're looking and we are following what's happening in Egypt, in Syria. And if I would have told you 2 years ago that President Mubarak will be in a cage in Cairo today, you would have looked at me and said, well, maybe I should sleep a little bit more. And when I tell you today that there should not be a Palestinian state, and we should actually speak about a three-state solution, maybe some of you say, well, it's too good to be true. We cannot actually make it happen. And I think we have to, but first we have to convince ourselves. Then we have to convince our allies in the U.S., and we have a lot of supporters. And then eventually we will sit down with our neighbors. I don't know if it will be in 5 years, 15 years, but one day it will happen. And then we can actually speak about a peace in the Middle East. And meanwhile, it's not going to be easy for us. Meanwhile, we're going to have to manage the conflict. And I know it's very hard because also here in Israel and the U.S., people got used to very quick solutions. They want to see fast results. Whether when they buy something or they invest in something, they don't want to look at a long-term investment. And unfortunately, I cannot promise the people in Israel today and you that there will be fast results. You know, I know usually you see politicians, and now you are in the middle of a campaign that's making promises to you and telling you, you know what, you will vote for me, and I will deliver to you 1, 2, and 3 within 4 years, 2 years. And what I'm saying is actually the opposite. I say, you know, vote for me or support my ideas, but I'm not promising you anything in the near future, because the truth of the matter that I don't think something new will happen in the near future. I think we have to learn to manage the conflict, to contain the terror forces around us, to fight every few years in the north with the Hezbollah, in the south with the Hamas, to overtake all those obstacles. And in the long term, we will be able to achieve a real peace. I want to address the issue of Iran. I know before you ask the questions, until when Israel can wait and what is the timeline. First of all, let's agree that today everybody understands that Iran is a threat. A few years ago, when we were trying to speak about it and to bring it up, it was very hard for us. Today people understand it, but they don't understand that it is a threat also to the American people. It is a threat only to the European, and not only to the Israelis. Maybe we'll be the first one. And you hear Ahmadinejad saying only yesterday that he wants to wipe out Israel. But if you listen to him carefully, he's saying, I want to wipe out also the U.S. And in my book, I write about the Jews who live today in Iran. There are about 25,000 Jews. And every day when those kids are walking into schools, into public schools in Iran, they have to march over the Israeli flag and the American flag. So the hatred is not against Israel per se. It's against Israel that represents something. And when you look at the horrible pictures, the horrible stories coming from the embassy, the American embassy in Benghazi, in Libya, you understand that it's much deeper than Israel. There is no settlement in Benghazi. There is no occupation in Benghazi. So it has nothing to do with the communities in Judea and Samaria or with the issues of a Palestinian state. It's a war of religion where radical forces are trying to push us outside of the region. And when I speak, and I just spoke to a Christian leader who came to visit Israel, And I told him, Pastor, now they are going after us, the Saturday people. But when you listen to them, you understand, they're saying it very clear. First we'll go after the Saturday people, but the next stage will be that we will go after the Sunday people, you, the Christians. And I think we have to send this clear message to the people who live in the U.S. It is an issue of the American people as well. And I know it is very, very hard to speak today in the U.S. about fighting another war or sending missiles to another country. I'm aware of the debate regarding the Middle Eastern issues, but you cannot ignore it. I was in New York City when the book came out, and exactly 11 years for 9/11. And look at Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda chose to attack the U.S. They could have done the same to the Israeli towers in Tel Aviv, but they chose to attack the U.S., and nobody can guarantee the U.S. that if Iran will become nuclear, they will choose to attack first Israel. And here we expect more from the White House. We expect more from President Obama. We need to see more than declarations. We need to see real actions. And in my book, I have a lot of criticism regarding the president's policies in the Middle East. The fact he did not visit Israel, the fact he tried to impose a settlement freeze in Judea and Samaria, and tried to force us to go back to the 1967 lines. But in one chapter, I say that I admire the president, and that was his decision to hunt down Osama bin Laden. I think it was a very, very important decision, and I think the American troops should be honored for such a heroic act. But see what happened. After Osama bin Laden was killed, there was only one leader that condemned the killing of Osama bin Laden, and that leader was Ismail Haniyeh from the Hamas in Gaza. So you cannot in one hand send your troops to kill Osama bin Laden and at the same time ignore what's happening here in Gaza, and to see the linkage between the Hamas, Iran, and Al-Qaeda. Even though they are Sunnis and Shiites, but the hatred to Israel brings them together. And we see also the new president of Egypt using the same language, unfortunately. So to sum up, I think that my book, it is presenting a bold approach. That yes, maybe it is not pleasant, but we cannot be nice all the time. We have to say what we believe. And in terms of the decision making, we need to work with the American administrations. We need to bring whatever we can to support the U.S. and vice versa. But when it comes to the decision making, we have to look at the interest of the people who live in Israel. And maybe in the long run it will be appreciated. In 1981, when Prime Minister Menachem Begin took the decision to attack the nuclear reactor in Usirak in Iraq, he was condemned by the UN, he was condemned by the US, even Shimon Peres, then the leader of the opposition, condemned him. And 10 years later, when the US invaded Iraq, people in the White House said it was a smart move by Prime Minister Begin. So when we talk about Iran, maybe now we have disagreements or different timeline, but I'm sure in the long run, even people in the White House will appreciate the position that we are taking regarding this threat. I can continue forever. You know, when you give a politician a mic, it is dangerous, but I want to stop here. And to thank you, and with your permission, to take some questions from the audience.
Okay, thank you. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I will announce each caller prior to bringing you into the conference. Please remember, if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you are selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay, I'll bring our first caller with a question. It's Mr. David Levinson. Please go ahead with your question, sir.
Thank you very much for informing us of your interesting ideas today. I'm sure you will understand if some of us may be a little suspicious about the fact that Egypt would ever want to absorb Gaza, which it can't control, or that the Hashemites would want to absorb all those Palestinians, which they can't control. But how about in the short run, a three-state solution, Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank?
Well, David, I think what we see today, that in terms of the daily life of the Palestinians, we do not interfere on the daily life in terms of what's happening today in Gaza, in the cities in the West Bank. But when you're talking about a state, I don't want to see an entity of terror in my backyard. I don't want to see Al-Qaeda state in Judea and Samaria. So when you fly into Israel, you have to actually make a U-turn with the airplane in order to land in Ben-Gurion Airport. I don't want to, every time I land in Ben-Gurion, to actually fly above a Palestinian state in the heat of Judea and Samaria. So I think if you're talking about a state, I would say it very clearly, not in my backyard. I don't know where you're coming from, David, but if I would have told you that you would have a Al-Qaeda state next door to where you live, I'm not sure you were very happy about it.
I understand.
Okay, thank you very much. And there's no further questions right now. Ms. Stern, did you want to add anything, or did you want Danny to continue?
Yes, I would like to ask a question. I'll reserve that right. Now, in laying out a compelling argument in your book for your approach, what is the domestic support that you have among the Israeli population for this idea?
Well, I think that what we see today in Israel is a process of awakening. For years, there was an argument whether the land for peace paradigm will work, and we will actually see that if we give land, we get peace. Well, people like myself were pessimistic about it and actually said we should not consider doing so because we have rights to the land, biblical rights, historical rights, legal rights. And I think after the disengagement from Gaza exactly 7 years ago, the majority of Israelis realized that it has nothing to do with land for peace. So they are open now for new ideas because they were willing to pay a price. The majority in Israel were actually willing to pay a price in terms of giving land and to receive genuine peace. But today they realize it's not going to work and they are more open to other ideas. And I think that I see today within the Knesset and within the public that there is a majority, a growing one. It's people are more and more acceptable for this approach.
Well, as Mr. Levinson had pointed out, given what President Morsi has been saying, how likely are there to be any reception to any incentives for them to get involved in your plan?
I think in the short run, it's not feasible. I'm talking about the long run. I think today when the people here and hear President Obama talking about the creation of a Palestinian state and going back to the 1967 line, they don't need more than that. They don't need to negotiate. They're getting everything that they can dream of. But even in the future, they will understand that there is a different approach in Israel that is not willing to do such a mistake. I think they will be able to discuss it. It's not going to happen tomorrow. I'm aware of that. But I think in the long run, we will find the opening to discuss it and to promote it. And we have to look at the interest of us and not try to appease the others. We don't have the luxury to appease our neighbors all the time.
Are there further questions coming in from the board?
Yes, there are. Our next question comes from Mr. Daniel Pipes. Please go ahead.
Hello, Danny. This is Daniel. Thank you for joining us. And question, your book argues that Israel needs to look out for its interests first. Could you, at this very tense time in U.S.-Israel relations, explain what you would be doing, what you would like your government to be doing at this time?
Well, I think what we have to do is mainly to put, I don't know, you speak about a lot about red line, but I think in terms of we cannot actually allow Iran to become nuclear. And if we get into the point, there are two options, Daniel. One option is to keep talking and get to the point where Iran actually reach the capability of building a bomb. And the second option is to bomb Iran, to neutralize the threat coming from Iran. I think eventually we will have to do it with or without the support of the U.S. or the Western society, the democracies in the world. We hope that it will be a joint effort, but if we will see that nobody is willing to take the step further ahead, we do have the capability to do it ourselves.
Clearly, any Israeli strike would only have temporary effect, and the Iranians have the means, the skills, and presumably the will, unlike the Iraqis and the Syrians, to rebuild. Are you ready for that commitment, that it would mean not just attacking now, but presumably again and again in the future?
Well, I think that that is one of the main reasons we hope to see involvement of stronger forces that should be involved with different technology and means in this effort. But even if it means delaying it, I think we have to do it. And I don't like to use it a lot, but sometimes I cannot run from the comparison before Second World War, the voices that were trying to appease Hitler and Chamberlain was trying to appease him. You know, when you hear the voices coming from Iran, and you see him actually taking pictures in the reactors every 2 weeks, and you understand that that is becoming his main agenda, even postponing it, it's very important.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to our next caller, Mr. Bob Guzzardi.
Thank you very much for your comments. I was at your presentation at the Zionist Organization of America's board meeting, and you seem to be less concerned about Egypt than many of us are. And I was wondering if you could explain your views, the long-term views, why you think that Egypt is not going to be as much of a threat as some of us think.
Well, we are concerned, and we follow what's happening in Egypt very carefully. Also, the U.S. is giving a lot of money to Egypt, and when we saw, or we actually following the will of Egypt to purchase new submarines for Germany, we are not happy about all of this. But we cannot compare the challenges of dealing with the armies of Egypt, even Syria and Jordan, compared to a new balance of power in the Middle East, meaning a nuclear state. And so I think we're trying to say it very clear. We can deal with all the threats in our region, but now if we will actually allow Iran to become nuclear, it will be a new ball game, and we are not sure what will be the situation then.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go to our next question, Mr. David Levinson.
Yes, this is a response to my friend Daniel's comment. I constantly hear that if Israel attacks, it will only set Iran back a few years. I would suggest that depends on the kind of attack. A nuclear electromagnetic attack will set them back not a few years, it'll set them back indefinitely. Why is the assumption always that the attack will be minimal as opposed to a maximum attack that does the job once and for all?
Well, David, if you look at the history of modern Israel, you see that before conflict, Arab leaders have the tendency of speaking about their capabilities and what will happen to Israel eventually. But then when you look at the outcome of the conflict, you see it was not the case. And I think, I don't want to get into details and war plans, but if we have to engage with Iran, with all due respect to the voices we heard in the last 48 hours, I think that we will be able to actually demonstrate our technological superiority and the capabilities of our armed forces.
I'm not questioning the abilities. I'm questioning the willingness of Israel to use its maximum abilities to deliver maximum destruction on Iran.
David, we are all aware that engaging in a conflict, it means that there will be a lot of retaliation, and I'm sure that the leadership in Israel will be bold enough to do whatever is necessary to ensure the security of the people in Israel. I cannot get into details, but I say whatever is necessary.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that the attack be great enough so that there's no fear of retaliation against anyone.
Well, I think that I hope we will not get to this point, but if we will have to, we will be able to demonstrate our advantage.
As Senator Lindsey Graham has said, leave them with nothing that can fly and nothing that can float.
Well, unfortunately, I cannot. I do sit in the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, but I cannot get into the details of what are the capabilities and what are the means we will be able to use. But I can say it very clear that we have proven in the past that when we need to prove our strengths, we know how to do it.
Yes, I have a question. You've already spent some time releasing your book and getting reactions from different audiences. What has been the general response in the broader public, as opposed to just within the Jewish circles, to your book?
Well, I think the main response that I am facing is people are actually shocked that there is an alternative, because the idea of a two-state is actually, if you analyze it, nobody spoke about it, it was not acceptable 20 years ago. And today, unfortunately, people think there is no other alternative. They say it's a given. You have to build a Palestinian state. You have to divide the land, divide Jerusalem. They think it is a given. And I think by me coming and saying, well, it is not a given, let's talk about something else, it's not easy. It's not an easy sell, but people are actually now opening their minds and thinking about it.
Who are your supporters in Israel that are not within your own camp, but that you see are giving you support from outside of your own circles?
Well, I think, and I write it in my book, that you know the average Israeli, I would call it somebody who lives in the center of Israel, who cares about his mortgage and education for his children, and is watching American Idol or whatever reality show we have today. I think the average Israeli, who is not very involved or informed about everything that happens today in Judea and Samaria or in Egypt, I think those people are starting to understand that we need to do something else. We made mistakes, and we should not go in the same direction. And I'm aiming to those people to educate them. And I wrote the book in English first, but now I'm going to translate it into Hebrew. And I think it is important that not only people in Israel, but also people outside of Israel will be aware that there is an alternative to the two-state solution.
Thank you. Are there further questions from the board?
There are no other questions.
Well, I want to thank you for a stimulating idea that many people are not used to, and I can understand the shock and response to it, but it is very heartening to know that the Zionism that you espouse in your book is something that you're going to spread further, and I hope it picks up traction.
I want to thank you and the forum for everything you do. I think it's very important.
We would like to thank you for being available and to our participants who engaged in this discussion.